9:03 here in the morning, Scramble, Jeff and Cindy Hoyt, and the guys, they're back. Bruce Morser, Bob Horsley.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
We're back.
Jeff, Cindy. They're off the road again.
You don't
back
sound
on
like,
the island.
Yeah, you're not talking through a speakerphone.
And
yeah.
It's nice to be sitting here and looking at you guys as opposed to sitting under a tree or in a subway restaurant or something, struggling to hear you on the phone and not knowing when you're supposed to talk or not.
There was quite an array of locations you guys chose for these conversations. I remember once we had an ambulance go by while you're out there on the road. You were in a chapel.
Yes.
On the Colgate campus.
That's right.
For one of our conversations. You were in your motel room.
Several times in the motel room. Yeah. Sitting on the front benches of convenience store. And wherever we were that day at that time.
Yeah.
Looking out the window at the giant concrete dinosaur and Circle, Montana.
Well, yeah. We heard a little bit about this on the 4th of July, but you sort of went to look for America, and it sounds like you found it.
Yeah, well.
And it was better than you thought.
It was better than we were hoping it was going to be the way it was. I think the overall experience left us with a good feeling. It was good. We found that all the people that we met on the trip were basically very gracious to us and very outgoing and nice and wanted to interact with us, wanted to find out what we were doing and what we were all about. And there was no real political overtones to anything, no real animosity shown because we had Lycra shorts on and, neon shirts. It was basically very, very open and friendly.
Well, they probably gave you leeway about the Lycra shorts on the bicycles.
So let's start with...
If you'd been in the feed store, it might have been different.
Yeah, maybe
let's start with, as we did every week, which was kind of talk about the stretch from our last conversation to now. And I guess you were in Mazama when you talked to Chris last week?
We were at John and Olivia Graffy's house in Mazama. They had given us refuge for the night and fed us an incredible dinner the night before. It was the first big chunk of meat I'd had. And so the next morning I was struggling to digest. And they also gave us a wonderful breakfast. And then we included them in the conversation when we were talking with Chris. It was a real great send-off for the final... Sort of a well-placed last meeting, because that was kind of we had the Washington Pass ahead of us, which was the reintroduction kind of to Northwest Life.
Which you have ridden a number of times.
Yes, we've been back and forth. Bob and I have ridden that one together many, many times.
Yeah.
So that was the first real familiar stretch of road that was like...
That was, Well, once we got into the Mazama area, it started getting more familiar.
Yeah.
I remember we rolled over the pass and we dropped down into Marble Mount the following night, and we ate at this little restaurant in Marble Mount. And I remember sitting at the cafe and looking around, and all of a sudden all the lush vegetation around the restaurant, the garden that was around it just sort of blew me away, because we hadn't seen any of that before that. And then I feel the air, it's this nice crisp air, and it was nice to be back.
Julie and I made our first trip out to the Northwest. I don't know. What is it? It's like 40 years ago, 35. No, more than that, 40 years ago. And I recall getting off the airplane and getting out of the airport and getting hit with this blast of air that I'm thinking, oh, this is good. This is different than Chicago air, which is where we were living at the time. And when Bob and I came over the pass and started heading down, I got that same sensation of like, oh, yeah, I know this air really well. And after 2 months of being dried out across the rest of the country, it's like, oh, I remember this. It's kind of a cool, clear, low humidity, and yet fullness to the air. It was a wonderful homecoming. Yeah, it was one of those olfactory moments where you realize, oh, I know where I am now.
Yeah, and you guys then, instead of coming down through Seattle, you went all the way across to Whidbey and went down to the Keystone Ferry. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, we went over Deception Pass, which was pretty cool. Deception Pass is not bike friendly.
Really?
Well, it's kind of narrow, isn't it?
That is one of the bike problems.
Most bikers probably just go on the road and hog the whole road, but we actually did the path and just sort of walked our way through the path and made it across. But it's not made for bicycles. I don't believe.
A little harrowing there.
Yeah, a little harrowing.
It is. And yeah. You know, when you're on a bike, your center of gravity is higher than all the guardrails. So everything that's sort of designed to help people stay safe, you realize, gee, if I don't aim this right, I'm going to high center this.
Yeah.
And
go, yeah.
It was exciting. We met some people there. We bumped into a guy there that we ended up riding with for the rest of the day and came over on the Keystone Ferry.
That's right.
With a sort of a small group of people that we kind of collected during the day and had a wonderful time, exchanged maps. I actually got talking to a guy who we didn't quite know what roads we were going to take to connect the Port Townsend down to Southworth Ferry. And I met a guy who had the adventure cycle maps for that portion, which Bob and I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And so those kinds of, it was just a nice bit of circumstance that occurred at the last minute.
And you were trying to make a particular boat because you had sent out an email saying, we're going to be back on the island on this boat, we think.
Yeah, the one from Port Townsend to Southworth. Yeah.
Which was going well. Yeah. That was, we left early.
The boat from Port Townsend to Southworth? I just kind of had
the stretch on the bike.
The next day, which we went from Port Townsend to Southworth.
And we knew people, a couple of our cycling friends would meet us at the North End Ferry. So we had to kind of pick a ferry boat.
Yeah.
So we did, and Bob and I left with lots of extra time, but we weren't planning on me taking us on about a 5-mile detour through the woods, which I really began to totally lose touch of where I was. The only time in the entire trip I got lost. And I got lost.
The last 10 miles.
Well, that wasn't the only detour. At the very end of the day, we went through Port Orchard. And we still thought we had plenty of time. And we stopped in at this little bar for a quick lunch. And the quick lunch didn't turn out to be very quick. It took forever. It was one of the worst services we had had on the whole trip. Yeah. And it was like, come on. And we finally got our food and we ate. And we thought, okay, we have plenty of time. And we went out. And before this, we had talked, we need to still leave plenty of time in case we have a mechanical or issue or flat tire or whatever. Yeah. So I thought, what the hell, I'll check my tire just to see. And I never do that. And I checked my tire before I got on it, and I had a flat tire.
Oh, really?
And so
while you were at lunch?
It happened previously and just it deflated during while we were eating. So we fixed it, and then we went down the road another mile, and I got another flat tire.
Was it the other tire? No, it was the same tire.
Sharp rocks, glacial
Somebody
till.
Was messing with us, you know?
Oh, man.
You saw two of the fastest tire chains on record. But we in this panicky thing, and we didn't quite understand how far the road we had to travel was. So there was this real sense of mystery. And we made this dash for Southworth, but we still got to the Southworth Ferry in time for a Nutty Buddy.
We did.
the final Nutty Buddy store.
That's right.
And we gather at the little convenience store for the Nutty Buddy, and there must have been 10 or 20 tandem bikes that follow up behind us. And there's some sort of tandem bike convention going on somewhere. But
in Seattle.
It was in Seattle, yeah. But it was pretty surreal seeing all these tandem bikes roll up.
Wow. How many Nutty Buddies do you think you consumed over the
course of the So I actually looked into that this morning.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. There's still some research on this.
I did.
That's great.
I did. And I couldn't get a distinct number, but each of us, I think Bob and I were equal in terms of Nutty Buddies. And yes, there were a few ice cream bars that filtered in there and some interlopers, but it was easily over, each of us had over 100 Nutty Buddies on the trip, easily.
Oh, I thought it was way more than that.
On a roughly 80-day trip.
I can, because we were at least... We were two Nutty Buddies a day.
Oh, yeah.
And some days that I probably, a very small handful, I had one Nutty Buddy. But on other days, I had three Nutty Buddies. So, okay, let's call it 120 Nutty Buddies.
By the way, there is not a brand out there called Nutty Buddy anymore.
We didn't see it, but there is a Nutty Buddy.
Or whatever else. Yeah. That does still exist.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think you really should contact their corporate headquarters and tell them the story, and you'll probably get a lifetime supply sent to you.
We found our favorites, though. Yeah. There's several. There's the King Cone and so on, but Swans makes a very sort of sweet little Nutty Buddy.
Oh, now you're connoisseurs.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very good. We'll see those. I'm going to see if I can put a plug in for some store on Vashon to carry those things.
So is that the only statistic that you brought with you?
No.
Do you have any others?
No, there are others. Were you interested in the square acres of French toast we consumed?
or bacon.
We could build a small house out of the bacon we consumed. I don't eat that much bacon, but boy, I did then. That
or
was
cups of butter for breakfast, you know. Of butter that you typically use a little piece of, but, you know, we would kill the whole thing.
And they'd take the one on the table off the side. And there are a few other statistics.
Okay.
Nice lead in, Jeff. Okay. I saw that one coming.
Thank you.
It was the total mileage was 4,322.9 miles.
Wow.
And that, we were gone for 60 days, left on May 2nd, returned on July 1st. So that's exactly 2 months, and those are 60 mm-hmm. days. And we took a lay day early on and a lay day about 3 weeks to the end. And then we were sort of forced to take 4 days off because I had to make an emergency trip in the middle of the thing. So we rode for 54 days, and that equals about 80.05 miles per day, which is what we were shooting for in terms of, we thought like 75 miles a day, but we were not planning on the severity of the headwinds. So Bob and I are both pleased that, and sort of surprised that we actually got the miles done. We got done.
Yeah, especially given the conditions. I mean, you had headwinds almost constantly.
Yeah, we did.
It was bad.
Toward the end of the trip, we started ramping up our mileage a little bit because the headwinds weren't quite as severe, and we were getting in a little better condition. But we ended up doing 90 to 100 miles a day for the last week. Week and a half.
Yeah, I have. I even looked at that, and we have 7 days in a row of 100-mile days, and we basically took 3 weeks from Bismarck back into Seattle without a rest day. And it was interesting to see that, and I could see it in Bob because I could look at him, but then I began to realize, oh my gosh, I'm probably even worse than Bob here. We started getting weaker finally. You sort of think after all those miles, you might get stronger. But we began to tell, no, we've tipped that point.
Losing muscle.
Well,
we were just getting too tired.
We were just getting fatigued.
Oh,
and by the end of it, it was, you know, not only the muscle fatigue, but I think just the mental fatigue of just being on the road and having to focus on what you're doing.
Do you think it's possible that as you got closer, you're starting to sort of let go a little
Maybe
bit?
Maybe so.
The anticipation of home just would sort of drop your you would think it would increase your energy, but maybe
I think it was purely physical. As a point, I've seen that in friends who've trained very hard for something, and all of a sudden they start to burn up. I mean, professional riders and long tour races and so on, they have to be really careful with that. Things like the Tour de France has either a day or two rest days per the race because they know people just burn up all of a sudden. We were getting there.
But, you know, at the end of it, like anything, you sort of build up and then your body sort of lets down after you're done. It was interesting. I was talking to Bob McMahon this morning when he saw us at Jensen Point the other day at the boathouse. As we came in to dip our front tire, he said, I have never seen you guys look as ragged and tired as you did that day.
Thanks, Bob.
He said, you guys look like skeleton shells.
And felt the part, too.
So what was it like to return to the island after what had to be, by far, the longest time away that you'd ever spent? I mean, in the entire time you've lived on Vashon, have you ever been away from the island for 2 months in a stretch?
Yeah, and even more than that, actually, we went on a long boat ride in our old sailboat, which had a similar kind of feeling because it wasn't just that we were gone from the island, we were gone from the connections as well.
Yeah.
That Bob and I sort of maintained email contact, and I tried to do a little Facebooking along the way. But we were both pretty much out of touch. And then as it went on too, we stopped looking at television mostly.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped really listening to the news or anything else. So that was more than just being gone from home. It was being really gone, which was this wonderful joy of the thing. We became more and more present to the immediate environment, which is something I don't really want to lose. And you've asked us about before. So it was pretty profound. So coming back to answer your question, coming back was, Bob and I were both pretty foggy. kept saying, "Are you getting this? Is this really happening?"
I had complete brain fog for 2 days. Kathleen caught me in the kitchen just staring at the cabinets. I think I was trying to figure out where the plates were or something. But and then I would go to the refrigerator and just open it and go, "Wow,
look at all that!"
Not a nutty buddy in the fridge.
But just not really able to put together cohesive thoughts. And I didn't even think about list or anything until yesterday. Or trying to do.
Starting
to feel better.
It almost sounds meditative. You know, you got into a sort of a retreat mode.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things we were really looking for.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. I mean, they wanted to see could we find that kind of thing, and I think we really did. That, and it's the sort of thing that I don't want to lose. I mean, I got to lose a bunch of that. But I am determined not to disconnect as much from that. And I'm recalling being gone like on a 6-week boat tour, too. It's like, or you get connected with something else. So everyone wants that, and it's hard to get in our busy life. So we'll see if we can hang on to it.
Another thing that you you asked what it was like coming back. Another piece of that to me was it was an overwhelming interest in what we were doing and just the the people that we saw, and you know, the homecoming that we had here, to me was really overwhelming. I had no idea there was that much interest. We were just out there having a good time.
Yeah.
We were painting and bicycling, and we had a great time. But it was really overwhelming to me just the response we got. And
getting
and
off the boat and seeing
it made me feel really good to be home.
Mm-hmm. Getting off the boat and seeing all the people on the bikes, and far more. I knew of some people because they told us we were going to meet us there, but seeing there are many more than I thought. And that was real heartfelt. And then we picked up a few along the way, and then pulling into the boathouse and seeing the ribbon across the road, and that was quite emotional.
I was
very touched by the whole thing. Thank you to all the people who did show up for that. That was
absolutely
a big deal. Very helpful in terms of process. Like, oh, we're back. Good. We're back.
Well, you did it for all of us. I mean, everybody's thought about whatever their equivalent is of what you just did, and you start to think, well, the older we get, the less the likelihood of that happening is. Yeah. And you guys just went and you just did it.
Yeah, and largely, I mean, I've said this a couple of times, but I can't overemphasize this. I'm aware that Bob and I could pull this off because we could schedule this in our work or lack of work or whatever. But it, you know, Julie and Kathleen and Nell and Madeline made the hole and ran the cover for us to do this.
Uh-huh.
So we are both very, very grateful.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we're talking to Bruce Morrison and Bob Horsley, just back from their 4,300-mile cross-country bicycle trip.
Coast to coast.
This is our final in-studio conversation about the trip after 9 updates along the road and an in-studio preview before you left. Yeah. Our 11th conversation. What surprised you along this trip? What happened that you weren't expecting?
We've been asked this a couple times, and for me, the answer to this kind of finding, you said, go look for America, and it's like, I cringe. I start thinking of Simon Garfunkel. No, don't. It was such controversial times, and everyone's got angst, and it's very hard to even avoid it now they're home. But the fact that, as Bob mentioned, the politics never came up once. We only talked politics once, and that was the German couple we met at the top of Sherman Pass. And Bob and I were both so on our lips at that point that we could barely have the conversation. But people didn't want to talk about it. They wanted to make contact, and the degree of friendliness, the degree of open, warm-hearted, doesn't matter who you are. I can tell we're different, but I do want to know you, and I just by default kind of like you, and you'll have to prove me wrong kind of thing. That was a surprise. It was much more abundance than I thought.
I agree. And you know, the fact that these little towns, the majority of the towns that we went through were, They seemed like islands. I mean, they were really isolated, and that part of it made me realize this is a big country, and these little towns are far and few between, and you know, we live in a really communal atmosphere in the urban area that we live in, but these folks are really, they have to be pretty self sufficient.
They're islands in their own way.
They are in tight little communities, so it made me understand maybe a little better why people are more conservative and more self, you know, thinking that everybody's more self-sufficient and self-supportive and less in need of a communal social need, you know, sort of services.
Because they're so
they have to be self-sufficient. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's funny to see these towns too. So many of these towns. And our whole deal was to go to a town and then stagger around, Frankenstein around after our rides and look for a place to eat or roll through. And we got very good at spotting the right place to have coffee or something. And so we were cruising the towns, looking hard. And most of these towns have like 50% occupancy at best. Mm-hmm. And yet, the towns also have new sidewalks.
Yeah.
And so you're thinking, wait a minute, something is happening here where the economics of the towns looks brutalized, and yet they are doing okay. Uh-huh. And you look at the cars that are pulled up in front of the restaurants, and they're not totally shabby. They're, people are doing okay. The farms are in fantastic conditions, whether it's a giant ranch, a giant corporate farm, or a small mom and pop thing with a little barn. Everything is in very good shape.
This is something that surprised me. I think before the trip, when we drive our cars to travel between places or wherever, or even as destinations, you typically go to more convenience store strip mm-hmm. developments, mm-hmm. and you see all the franchise restaurants and you see all the franchise businesses, and I guess I was so accustomed to doing that I was anticipating that on the trip a lot.
Yeah.
And what we were doing is we were going through these little towns. In fact, we would go right through the middle of these towns looking for diners, you know, for lunch. We rarely saw franchises. We rarely saw strip developments. I mean, sometimes we would because we were staying at like Super 8 motels or whatever at night. But the majority of what we saw, the fabric of these little towns, was mom and pop mm-hmm. establishments, which to me was really refreshing. And it was encouraging to know that that's still out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Almost out of kind of, I don't know, what we all do this. We save our receipts and then we sort of wonder, why did I save that? We're trying to do this on a Visa card mostly to keep cash to a minimum. And I would have this big pile of receipts and I'd be in it, why am I carrying this around? It weighs something. So I started tearing a few up and then I realized, no. Each one of these things becomes a name. And all these names are like, you know, Ned's Diner, those kinds of things. I'm like, wait, I want these now.
Yeah.
So I saved them all.
Scrapbook items.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also a memory you can associate with those names.
Yeah.
You probably remember a lot of those places.
That's right. That's kind of one of the things I look through to see the ice cream treats. I could see how many were bought in a day kind of thing by looking at those this morning.
Yeah.
And those become souvenirs of this town, the series of towns where the small businesses are alive, even if the town itself is 50% occupancy. The VCA folks took an idea that Susie Kutcher had that was fantastic about as a going away gift and for the effort I put in on that project at VCA. They gave me a Subway card, you know, restaurant card that had $200 of credit on it.
Oh my gosh.
Bob and I assumed this thing would be gone within the first week, maybe stretch it for two. And we used it once when we were driving around collecting gear for the trip. And then on the trip, we used it twice. That was it.
One of them was for the radio interview that we did.
Oh, yeah. We needed a place to go to. So I still have $170 on my Subway card.
Luckily, there's one right down the street.
Vinny is going to be very happy to hear this.
Yeah, exactly.
Vinny, Benita, I'm coming at you.
Anything you'd do differently if you were to do this again?
Oh, I sort of anticipated that question. I don't really know that I would. And the question where people keep asking us, well, would you go east to west again? Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I think the all the benefits of what we did with the sun at our back and going from a more settled area to a less settled area, going home, all outweighed the headwinds.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did that right.
Yeah, Bob is so right on that. I was thinking about this right after the last day, where we're literally pushing into the last day. We get over the pass, thinking, "Okay, this has got to be over for the headwinds." And coming down Washington Pass is this terrific headwind. So I'm thinking, is this possible? did I make the right decision? Did Bob and I figure this out by going east to west? And I realized if we were going west to east, I'd be pedaling through Pittsfield, Massachusetts at this moment.
Yeah.
And that's not quite the same grandeur as coming down off Washington Pass.
Yeah, you know, I think I'd put it this way. And here's another way for me to encapsulate the trip is every morning that we got on the bicycles, Bruce and I, we wouldn't say this to each other every day, but I felt it, and I think he felt it too.
I did.
That we enjoyed getting them back on the bicycles, and it was like, okay, this feels right, this feels good, looking forward to another day.
Yeah.
And we never felt like, oh God, we got to do this again, or you know, this is going to be a bad day. I mean, there were days that were really challenging, but I think we look forward to them.
The part that I would, the only thing I think I would add, I completely agree with you, Bob, the I think we'd almost mistakenly done it right, and that I wouldn't change much of anything. Except I would probably add more lay days solely for the purpose of the painting. The painting became more and more important as time went on, and we were, because the conditions were challenging for that kind of thing, and so we had to work harder and harder to rip a painting off. That became very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually build in specific lay days more as painting days. And to have the time to where you knew that you would only ride 20 miles that day or none in order to knock off paintings and get things done. Yeah.
Well, that brings up, go ahead, Cindy.
Oh, well, the question I was going to ask is, when Jeff and I take a trip somewhere, even if it's just for a few days, when we get back to the airport and, you know, it's back into the land of cell phones and get waiting for Uber, and you get home and you start catching up on all the stuff that you need to catch up on from when you were gone, and then we kind of miss each other, like starting that very same evening sometimes. And I was just wondering, have you guys spent a lot of time on the phone since we got back? Yeah, I mean,
did we spend a lot of time on the phone before we left? No, Bob and I don't spend that much time on the phone with each other. But Bob, Bob and I, we were through a 4th of July party, and Bob was over there helping and moving stuff around. So I don't think there's been a day where we haven't seen each other. But I do notice it's like, Bob's not around in the morning now. I'm not, you know, scarfing French toast in front of Bob.
Yeah,
he's not in the other bed in the double room.
Yeah, I mean, we were with each other 24 hours a day,
exactly.
for 60 days, which is a lot of together time. You know, and I think that worked. I think we coexisted pretty well there all the way to the end. I think we were saying maybe less to each other again because we didn't need to communicate our thoughts as much. Because we could read our minds pretty well, but I think overall we did well, because I think we were both pretty considerate to each other as far as, you know, giving each other the space they needed, or knowing what was important to the other person, and we know each other well enough to be able to do that. I think
it's odd. Yeah. Bob and I have always had our names reversed. That people who even know us well will sometimes call me Bob.
Yeah.
And that's really, really common. I mean, to the point where I don't blink an eye, I don't even notice it. That if someone says, hey, Bob, I realize that might be me.
Yeah.
Well, the alliteration is part of that, I'm sure.
I think so, which made the Bob and Bruce thing nice.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny, that during this trip, we've always known that we're very different people. And the differences became delightful and obvious on the trip. We are different people that are very like-hearted.
Yeah.
I think that's the way. We're very similar hearts and very different manifestations of what that spirit is.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
That was fun to see. And it worked really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and it sort of shows itself in our paintings, too, believe it or not.
That's a good point.
It really does.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. You have stories, you have photos, you have paintings, and everybody wants to hear and see all of this. So at some point, there's going to be some sort of public presentation. Any idea on when, how, what?
No.
We'll get back to you on that. How about that?
I was thinking you probably have to just use thumbtacks to put it up on the wall.
Just yes to the concept.
Yeah.
We both like the idea.
We both like the idea of doing it. We'll do something, but not sure what it is.
Well, you know, there was something you guys talked about on the road that actually has worked for us, and I've used it with a few other people who have been facing similar challenges. You're talking about the headwinds and how there was a day when you didn't even get above like 12 miles an hour.
Nine.
And, yeah.
Nine is
right.
The average.
Yeah. And, yeah. And there were, at first you were trying to fight it and yeah. push beyond it and yeah. just wear yourself out. And then you realized we're not on an agenda here. We don't have to be at a certain yeah. place at a certain time. Let's just go with what feels right and adapt our speed to, what we can do. Mm-hmm. And take our time with it. And I have had a couple of conversations, including one with Cindy, who's working on a manuscript for a book that she was, you felt that you had to have a certain part of it done by a certain time. I said, think about Bruce and Bob in that headwind and just, there's no agenda here. You don't have to have this done by X date. That's all imaginary. And I think... In a lot of ways, the very thing you're talking about with your presentation, whenever you're going to do it, the public presentation, doesn't have to be by a certain time.
Yeah, right.
It's no matter when you do it, it's going to be interesting and relevant to people. And
yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's in a week or in 2 months.
We will do it definitely, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we will. Bob and I will have to sort of get together and figure out all those questions you asked. But that idea of not trying to consider everything, not trying to figure out everything, this leaning into a headwind where we begin to realize this is worse than we thought it was going to be. And so you just kind of push slowly. That calls to mind that great 11-year-old kid, Dexter, that we had met and his sister, Kylie. Mm-hmm. And when we asked Dexter, you're a kid. How do you do this? We're finding this hard to ride across the country. And how do you do it? And he says, well, I just get back on the bike every morning. And that feeling
how
of...
How zen.
Yes, yeah. How zen. And the sense I went into this was, I was one of the things, besides just looking for what is this country like out there, was one of the big things. One of the big things I was very interested in that did come to pass was this idea of, is it possible for me to think less and feel more? And I find myself just racing around thinking about everything, trying to figure mm-hmm. out when's the show and when's this, when is mm-hmm. that, how do we do this? And the paintings were all done with that spirit of like, we're just present. We're just mm-hmm. trying to be present here. There's no mm-hmm. thinking involved. That was one of the great things about painting is you're not thinking, you're just being aware, you're present. Mm-hmm. And being able to capture that and bring that along with us so that sense of just being aware instead of trying to plan everything could be part of however we present this final thing. That would be great. And I come away from this trip very much with that spirit of, I very much feel much more present to the moment, and I'm feeling things more, and I'm really thinking about things a lot less. And I think Julie's nervous.
Sorry, I'm not thinking anymore.
But honey, we'll get to it.
Tomorrow.
Any closing comments from any wisdom gained? Anything you want to add?
Oh, one closing comment to you guys. Thanks for doing this. Yes. This has been a real treat.
Our pleasure.
And it's been a great way to chronicle the trip for us. It'll be nice to have a sort of this dialogue for mm-hmm. For future reference.
You would send these things out afterwards. Was just remarkable.
Yeah.
So I have to admit that after I think it was like maybe the first four or five of these interviews, I would actually email Jeff saying, Jeff, should we be doing this?
You really want to do this.
Bob and I making fools of ourselves. And he kept saying, no, keep doing it. Do another one.
Yeah.
And enough people have come up to me and said, that was really nice. It was just a good way to do it. That thank you, Cindy and Jeff, for encouraging us to do these radio interviews. They were really great.
Well, it's been a nice way for us to verbalize our thoughts about what we've done the past week and make things.
Yeah.
It's been good for us to summarize them each week.
And I doubt the guy's listening, but the guy who very first in the Uber on the way here, the Uber driver that said the only piece of advice, the only piece of advice with his finger pointing to the sky in an heroic voice said, pepper spray. Well, we did.
Yeah, that's right.
We never got the pepper spray out, and we were chased by exactly one dog the entire time.
Yeah, that was not a problem.
Yeah,
a good trip. You guys made it really good too.
Thanks for all the help.
Well, thanks for coming in, and we look forward to hearing the big wrap up whenever that may happen.
We'll let you know.
All Bruce right. Morser, Bob Horsley, thanks for being here. It's 9:37 on the Morning Scramble. With Jeff and Cindy and End of the Line, Traveling Wilburys. your suggestion. An excellent one. They're home. And here are the Traveling Wheelbarrows to tell you all about it on KVSH. Well, it's all